copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I'm John Lenton, and I'm leading this session, which I've always thought of as time management, which Greg suggested we needed to turn into accomplishing what you need to do, because of course that's what it's all about. How do you get done all the things that you have on your plate to do? So let me ask you, first of all, to think about what are your biggest time wasters? What are the things that cause you the most frustration because they run away with your time? Might be phone interruptions, people calling on your mobile at the time when you really wanted to concentrate on something else. Maybe text messages or WhatsApp coming through just when you're trying to concentrate on something else. Even if you've turned it on silent, that phone vibrates in your pocket and you have to be superhuman to resist actually taking a look and seeing what it says, even if it's an advert from somebody. Maybe it's people wanting to see you, visitors who haven't made fixed a time to come and see you, but they just pop in and they say it'll only take 5 minutes. And of course it never does. Maybe you don't have an assistant, you don't have somebody that you can go to and ask if they would help you with doing something. You hand away one of the jobs that you do. Too much on your plate, too many things to do. Do come and sit down. Please feel free. Too many things going on, and you just don't really know which one to do first. You feel a bit like a rabbit in the headlights. You're stuck. And if you know that feeling, all of the rest of us do too. You may feel that it's your email that gets in the way, or too much paperwork, or whatever it might be. It's all the things that get in the way between you and what you want to get done. I wonder which one is your biggest time waster. Well, I have to tell you, your biggest time waster is you. You see, all of us start with exactly the same amount of time. Nobody has an advantage, nobody has a disadvantage here. We all have 168 hours in each week, and we can choose how we're going to use that time. But unfortunately, most of us have a tendency to waste that time. The time that we have at our disposal, we will use poorly. And I expect that's why you're here, that you would like to find some magic formula that helps you to start using time more productively, more effectively than you've been able to do before. Well, I don't have a magic formula, but I have some suggestions. And I found that those suggestions can really work if you put them into practice. Obviously, if you don't put them into practice, like buying a book at the bookstall and then leaving it closed. So let's have a go and try to think about what we're going to do with this. Let me make clear that, first of all, the essence, the crucial thing about time management is planning. Now that may come as an unpleasant shock to you. Many of us hate planning. We'd much rather be able to just kind of let things flow. Is that right? Yeah, just let it come and we'll go with it. Well, I understand that. That's a nice way to be. Sadly, it is the least effective way that you can actually manage your time. Responding to events, reacting. That is, quite honestly, the worst way that you can manage your time. So, planning is the key. Why? Because when you plan things, it means that you're in control of what's going on, to some extent at least. Obviously, you can't take account of things that you don't know about, things that are going to come along and hit you on the back of the head. But to the extent you can, planning gives you the ability to stay on top of your schedule. The alternative is you let other people or other events control your day. You see, if you are not planned, if you don't have any scheme of how you're going to spend your time, then what you'll do is you'll respond, you'll react to events and people as they come along. And that is not the way that you can stay on top of it. Planning is quite simply a four-stage process, and I'm going to talk us through these four stages. They're pretty simple. This is not rocket science. I think you'll find it. This is relatively straightforward to figure out. But it starts with goals, goes on to priorities, your ideal day, which I'll talk about a little bit, and then the daily plan, which is really the key to time management. Your goals tell you, what should I focus my time on? What's most important to me? What am I trying to accomplish? Obviously, you can have goals that are short-term or long-term. They can be big goals or small goals. They can be personal goals or they can be organizational goals. But to take it step by step, we can say that a goal is something that, like a predetermined result, the thing that you want to achieve by a certain time. The things that you want to achieve by a certain time. They can be professional, your job-oriented goals, or they can be personal. Professional might be to get a paper written and published. Personal might be to lose 5 kilos by Christmas. Whatever it is, it's a goal that you will need to spend some time on. If they're big goals, then break them down into short-term objectives. So, for instance, if your goal was to write a book by the end of this year, then you are going to need to think about a set of milestones, if you like, objectives on the road to that goal, so that we'll have write the outline, for instance, by the end of February. You'll have chapter one written by the middle of March, and so on. If it's going to be a 12-chapter book, you're going to need to adjust those objectives as you go along. But you're going to try and figure out in advance how much time you're going to give yourself for which of those objectives. So the big goal, writing the book, is split down into smaller bite-sized objectives. And then perhaps you have to break down those objectives into specific tasks. What do I have to do today? Or what do I have to do this coming week? So that we can get a sense of, if I'm trying to make progress towards that goal, what do I have to do today to make some progress there? Let's go on and talk about priorities. Because we've got that to-do list sitting there on that set of goals on your piece of paper. But now, what order should you do them in? So, if you take this four-box matrix, we can think about it like this. Our priorities need to be the objectives and the tasks that we've set for ourselves in order of their importance and their urgency. Importance and urgency. Important means it's something really significant for you, something that matters a lot to you. Urgency means how quickly does it have to be done? What's the deadline, if you like? When does it have to be complete? And that tells us what's the urgency level. So on this matrix, I've got the importance down that vertical axis from low to high. And I've got the urgency on the horizontal axis from low to high. Now then, which one do I have to do first? Obvious.
High importance, high urgency.
Absolutely. High importance, come back. There. No, it doesn't. So, if I could write on it, which I won't because this is a screen, high importance and high urgency would be here. Right? Number one. Which is number two? Well, that depends on your tolerance for risk, tolerance for disapproval from somebody, tolerance for breaking people's expectations. Because strictly speaking, we all know it ought to be high importance and low urgency. So if my tax return is due next January, it's important, but it's not urgent. On the other hand, if, as so often happens, I get to the middle of January and I still haven't done it, it's suddenly moved up to both high importance and high urgency, so it falls into box number one. The question is, where do I put things? Being human, I suspect we will probably say number one here, number two, probably here, high urgency, but actually not so important. Because we like to get things done that are expected. We like to meet the deadline if we can, even when it's not terribly important. And that then automatically means that the next one, so one, two, three, where does three go? High importance but low urgency, obviously. And then you've got low importance and low urgency. Number four, or even, don't do it. If it's not important and it's not urgent, why do it? But then on the other hand, all of us know that the low importance and low urgency stuff is usually the stuff we do first. Isn't it? You look at your life. How important and how urgent is looking at Facebook? Yeah? How many hours do we spend on it first? We sometimes can see ourselves doing things which we know are going to waste our time, and yet we do them anyway. Well, I'm suggesting to you, maybe the way to handle it is maybe if you've got to do it, put it in the plan somewhere. But maybe put it in a time when it's not going to hurt the other things. So, the story is told of a guy called Charles Schwab, who was the chief executive of a big steel company in the USA. And he didn't like consultants. He was suspicious of consultants. And so he didn't really like the company to be employing consultants. And one day he was walking down the corridor in the big headquarters building, and he met this young lady who he'd not met before, and he usually knew people who were around, so he stopped and asked her who she was, and she said that she was a consultant who was working for one of his division heads. So she told him this with a certain amount of trepidation, because obviously she knew consultants were not popular with Mr. Schwab. Well, he said, okay, let me put a question to you. And if you can give me a good answer that I find helpful, I'll pay you what I think it's worth. So he said, tell me, how could I get more done every day? How could I be more productive and more efficient at what I do? So she thought for a few moments, and she said, this is what you need to do. Every day, write down what you have to do tomorrow. Everything that you have to do tomorrow, and then number them in the order of importance and urgency. So you write them down at random, and then you number them in the order of importance and urgency. Tomorrow, when you start work, start on number one and keep doing it until you can't actually do anything more on it. Maybe you need some more information, or maybe you need somebody else to come in and take something, take over on something. Keep going on it until you've done as much as you can on it. And then go on to number two and do that for as long as you can and as much as you possibly can spend the time on it. And then number three, and so on. If you can't finish everything that's on that list, it's okay, because you will have done the most important. And do this every working day. So Mr. Schwab accepted the advice, and I think some 3 weeks or 4 weeks later, he sent her a check for $25,000, because he said it was the single most useful piece of advice that he'd ever had in his life. I don't know if he changed his attitude to consultants, but he certainly did value the advice that he got from that one. So, I mean, boiling that down, we can say this. The secret of good time management is identify your number one priority and do it first. Contrast that with what so many of us do. Think about your day when you get in, when you start work. What do you do first? You probably go to the coffee machine first. You spend some time at the coffee machine because there's somebody else there, and you talk to them for a while. And then you get maybe to your desk, and you say, well, before I can start work, I've really got to tidy this. I mean, it's such a mess. I've got papers everywhere. I don't know where to find anything, so I'm going to take a bit of time and tidy up around here. And maybe that takes you half an hour or an hour. And in the middle of it, you get phone calls, and you get... you realize, wow, I haven't checked the email yet. I need to check the email to see if there's anything that's come in that I really need to give time to and attend to. And in the process of doing that, as you flick through it, you can't resist actually taking a quick look at Facebook and seeing what's going on with your friends. And in the process, you maybe glance at the news page that you like to check out. Friends, how long has gone by with all of those things, and none of them is on your list of priorities for either importance or urgency? You know, I look up, I say this looking at myself, how easy it is for time to just trickle away without anything to show for it. So, there's a better way. There really is. I don't mean to be evangelistic about this, but I assure you there is a better way. We put it together like this. We start with the goals, a to-do list, the short-term objectives, the immediate tasks, breaking that down, so we know what we have to do each day. We link those activities to our goals and objectives and tasks. We assign priorities based on importance and urgency. And that tells us what has to be done in what order. And then we schedule tasks according to the priorities and according to our ideal day. I haven't touched on ideal day, so let me do that for a moment or two. All of us are different. We find that there are times of the day when we are most energized, and there are times of the day when we're least energized. I don't know about you, I happen to like early mornings. I work well in the morning, but by 1 o'clock or so, I'm played out. And so between 1 o'clock and about 4 o'clock, just about right, I am really useless. when I am coming to the forum, I beg for mercy and say, please don't schedule me between the hours of 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock. So they're very obliging and helpful, but not every time. So the point is that my ideal day, I would have hard work early, tailing off to about 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock, nothing. And then at 4 o'clock, I can start to come back. I'm happy to work then from 4 o'clock till about 7:30, and then I start to fade. So I can get a good day's work done, but it's not all in one go. Now, you may be tied to a desk or tied to a timetable or a schedule when you have to be in a particular place in the office. I'm fortunate to be able to choose my time of when I work. Some of you will be in the same position, but some of you won't be, in which case you have to roll with it. You just do what you can. But what you can do is you can make sure that at your most productive times, that's when you do the most important stuff. So if you're writing a book which demands creativity and imagination and thought and meticulous writing, you do that when you're at your best. Rather than using your best hours, your best time, for the Facebook and the email and the other stuff. So, that's your ideal day. I don't know what your ideal day is. You may be great in the evenings. You may be an owl, where I'm a lark. That's okay. You need to plan around your own ideal day. And this, then, is the key. You then have to stay on track. It's terrific to plan. Once having planned, if you put it up on your board and then forget all about it, it's a bit like, as the Apostle Paul says, James says, you look in a mirror and you walk away, taking no notice. You don't brush your hair or do anything with the mirror. This is, it's absolutely essential, having created a plan, and to stay on track with it. What does a daily plan look like? Well, it just looks like a diary, really. It enables you to plan your day, and it means that you can see what needs to be done, number one, first. Not after all those other things. My recommendation is you do your daily plan 1 week at a time, in detail. Perhaps on the Friday evening before the week. If your working week is basically Monday to Friday, then do it on the Friday evening for the week ahead. Or do it first thing on the Monday morning for the week ahead. You know best what suits your timetable. I find that I tend to do it best on the Monday morning before I start doing anything else. So the first item on my daily plan is do a daily plan. The recommendation of the really good time managers is that you do your monthly plan for 18 months ahead. Obviously not in detail, but what that enables you to do is to put in the big events. So, leadership forum knocks out a week. Christmas, Easter, annual holiday, or whatever it might be. You can put those in, and then you know what you're working to on a broader scale. That's the really excellent time managers. So that way you get it done. This is a little bit what it looks like. Monday, it's just a column with times, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and so on. You prepare it weekly, as I said. It's based on your goals. What am I trying to do, and what are my tasks for today? Basically, you put your appointments in the ones that are fixed. For instance, if you sing in a choir or something like that, then put the choir practice in. If you're a student, then you need to put the times of your classes, your lectures, whatever, into it. If you have a staff meeting that takes place on a particular day at a particular time, put that in. These are the things that you don't have any choice about. So put the things in that are not for your choosing, but which have been imposed on you. And then the rest of the time is yours to choose how you spend it. And so you can plan into that how you do it. So as you see on Tuesday, my goal is to start that book outline. Well, it's actually an objective. It's smaller than that. It's part of that big book goal. And so I'll say, first thing, 8 o'clock, when I start work, I'm going to work on the book outline and I'm going to give it 2 hours. I might give it 3 hours or 4 hours. That's a choice. It depends on what other things I have on and how important or urgent they are. But that at least gives me the start. And I've penciled it in and I've got an arrow covering the times. So, it starts to fall into place. The benefits are clear. You've got an enhanced sense of purpose. I say you're driven by your priorities rather than by the priorities of other people. Now, your priorities may be to serve other people in some way, or to do what your boss wants you to do, or to do what your church wants you to do. That's fine, but they've become your priorities, and you're scheduling where you want to put them, how you're going to do them, when, and how for how long. It tells you, when you say, now what should I do next? It's easy. You just look to see what have you planned next. And that's what you do. And what you'll find is it dramatically increases your output. And it also improves the quality of what you're doing because you've got it set and planned for how you're going to do it. And you feel better. You know, just the act of making the plan, I find, takes a big weight off my shoulders. It takes away that kind of looming sense of impending disaster, that something is coming towards me and I'm about to have a train wreck because I haven't done various things that I ought to be doing. It actually takes that sense away because suddenly I know when and how I'm going to tackle it. But this is the big proviso. You actually have to make the plan and then you have to stick to it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's my biggest struggle.
Yeah.
I make all these elaborate, wonderful plans and all these diagrams and I read all these books on it and I set it up, I'm ready to go.
Absolutely.
A week later?
Yeah. That's sinful nature. Yes, well, we'll talk a little bit about some of the tips to try and keep that stuff at bay. But yes, I mean, the thing that you're saying is the thing that all of us here, I suspect, would put our hands up to. Absolutely. It's, you know, doing it. Doing the plan is discipline. But sticking to it is the hard bit. So we need to talk about how we do that, and we will indeed do so. Yes, sir?
Just Just on the plan, the goals. Now, I gather there can be several goals.
Oh, yes.
But they must be goals formulated so that I actually achieve it on that day.
Well, certainly, a goal that has no time fixed to it is just a vague goal. You say, sometime, you know, one day, I would like to write a book.
I mean, the one that is fixed on the day, say...
For the day, yeah. That can be just as simple as get started on a particular task. That's you're saying, this is my goal for today is I at least get started on this job and spend 2 hours on it.
That's enough, you say. I
mean, well, for that... sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. It's enough if you can get started on it, if that's your purpose.
If I may add, I attended, I think, 10 years ago your seminar.
Oh, right. How are you doing?
It feels, of course, like...
Yeah, that's right. It's a terrific... The theory's terrific, isn't it?
Yes. I found the micro concentration often is lacking. That is, during it, my thoughts wander away, or they do the little thing, they install that little program.
It's the distractions that can kill you, isn't it? I mean, I don't have magic answers for the distractions that go on in our heads, other than if it's something that's really happening a lot and is bugging you, then maybe this is something to pray about. I certainly do pray about it. I pray for help with dealing with distraction. My wife, when she has distractions, she says that what she does, she keeps a pad of paper when she's having her devotions, reading and praying. She says it's so easy for thoughts to come into her head. I must do such and such a thing. So she just writes it down on the pad. That gets it out of the way. She doesn't have to worry about trying to remember it. She's written it down and she's put it to one side. So she's coping with it, if I can say. And I think that's a way of dealing with it. What if we're involved in lots of different organizations, lots of different demands? How do you deal with all of those? The answer is the plan at least helps you to figure out what are you going to do and when. What's important? If you've got five things that are all maximum importance and maximum urgency, you've got too much on your plate. And probably that's an immediate signal that you need to try to simplify your life. If you're in multiple organizations, they've all got different things going on, then you need to be able to somehow or other align them and prioritize them. Because otherwise life becomes quite impossible. And you'll just be left with a sense of frustration all the time because you can't accomplish them all. So it's really down to you. It's to what extent are you going to manage those different demands? Because they're not going to manage themselves. I certainly try to make sure that my wife knows what I'm doing, what I'm going to be doing that day. The plan is up on the board. She is welcome to look at it at any time. I don't specially bring her and say, look at this. This is what I'm going to be involved today. I do ask her. I do tell her if I'm doing something important that day and I need 4 hours of space where I don't get disturbed and nothing happens. So would she please answer the phone if it goes? That kind of thing. Certainly. Do I publicize it among other people? No, not necessarily. Anybody that needed to know, I'd be happy to tell them. It's not a secret, but I don't particularly make the point of sharing it. But I can imagine in other circumstances it might be useful. What the plan does, if you've got your plan set for what you were going to do that day, something comes along, bam. 2 hours has just gone because you've had to give your attention to that. And you have to, because that's your job. That's your priority. Handle the immediate immediately. So the great thing about it is it now tells you, what have you got? I've got to now find time for that 2 hours that I was going to spend on there. Where am I going to put that? Now, that's why it makes a lot of sense to do your plan on the computer so you can move stuff around, Or if you're doing it on paper, which actually I prefer doing it on paper for some reason, use a pencil. Because then you can erase it and you can move stuff around. The whole point that it tells you, what have I got to move? What's going to give way to this thing that came in? Because I can never get that 2 hours back. So I actually have to shift stuff around so that I can do it. What is less important than the thing I was going to do but wasn't able to do? That has to get out the way and put this in instead. Does that make sense? The great thing about the plan is it tells you, what have I got to change? So, anything that prevents your doing those things is effectively a time waster. It's the thing that's going to waste your time and squander what you've budgeted to spend on it. So, take a moment or two now to have a look at that and ask yourself, what of these things, which of these things is your biggest time waster, if any? I've got half an hour to try and tackle some of these, so which means obviously that I can't tackle a lot, not with any degree of being able to respond to your thinking. So let's start with ineffective delegation. The thing that causes us not to delegate, and I was talking a little bit about this morning in the network group that I was with, is I don't delegate this because I can do it better than anybody else, and I'll do it faster than anybody else. And we kind of hold on to it because of that. We think we can do it better and quicker than anybody else can do it. The problem is that we need to delegate it anyway. Because we have to share that learning opportunity. How is anybody going to learn to do something unless we give it away? Now, that depending on how complex that task is, it may take a fair amount of training, fair amount of demonstration and showing how to do it. But that's not a reason not to do it. Because, for one thing, there are other people who are willing to do it and probably able to do it with a bit of coaching. Let me give you a most basic one. At our church, we have people who serve coffee at the end of the service. When people get together for fellowship, it's a really nice occasion. And the result is you've got to have a rota of people, a set of people who do it, different people week by week by week by week. So that has to be organized, and that has to be organized in advance for several weeks, for several months in advance, ideally. Now, my wife does that. She's the one who supposedly organizes it. But she is not very fast or efficient with the computer. So I say, okay, well, I'll do it. So I take it and I do it, and it takes me half an hour, something like that, and just to shift names around, put new dates and so on. But really what I ought to be doing, instead of spending my half hour, I realize it's my half hour as against her 2 hours, and maximum frustration with it, that if I could show her, if I took the time to show her how to do it quickly and easily, I would then spare myself having to do half an hour, half an hour, half an hour, half an hour in the futures. And that's really what this is about. The same applies to the other reason for ineffective delegation. They may do it wrong. Well, delegate it anyway. Because if you don't take risks, you don't get rewards. If they do it wrong, you can correct it. And it's also an opportunity for them to learn. Mistakes teach you better than almost anything else. So, tolerate mistakes. I like doing it myself. I enjoy it. So why should I delegate it? Well, you can tell what the answer is going to be. Delegate it anyway. You must move on. You've got to focus on new things to learn yourself, as well as giving stuff away. It would take longer to explain it than to do it myself. Yes? true. It certainly would. But how often do you want to keep doing it rather than explain it to somebody else? By the time you've explained it once and taken the time, they can learn. One of the motivators for not delegating is because I think that I'm going to lose control. I won't be able to stay on top of it. Delegate it anyway. Because you can, of course, stay closely in touch. You need to stay in touch as you, when you first started out giving something away to somebody. Stay close. Help them. Coach them. Encourage them. Support them. Correct them, but give it away. I think the saying that I really like is, do only what only you can do. If you applied that to your life, do you think that might help? That might simplify things? Now, some of you may say, but I don't have anybody to delegate to. I don't have an assistant, I don't have a secretary, I don't have a whatever. I understand that. I don't. But certainly, I have people in my church family who can take things on. Things that they would be perfectly capable of doing if I even just asked. They may not know that they need to volunteer for it. I may need to go and tap them on the shoulder. They call it being lent on, because that's my name. So I come and I lean on them and ask them, would they do this? And they do. They take it on. And that way, I can make sure that I stick to what I ought to be doing rather than doing things that everybody could be doing, but doesn't. Personal disorganization. As you see there, the symptoms are the desk, piled up post-its, looking for papers in a pile of paper. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes that feeling of disorganization. Even though you call it creative mess, you probably don't actually like that feeling of this stuff being everywhere and how difficult it is to find a crucial paper for a meeting just when you're in a hurry to get there and you can't find it. And then after the meeting, when you've been frustrated at not having it with you, you find it. Yeah, that's disorganization. What are we going to do about it? Well, I suggest there's some new resolutions to make. The first thing is, put it on your plan. Tidy my desk. And sort it out once and for all. Throw away lots of stuff. File stuff if you must. Give it away. But clear the desk. That takes a determined effort. I find that in order to keep me at that task, when it's got really bad, if I've been hugely preoccupied with something, it can get that way. The only way I can find to clear it is to recruit my wife and ask her to come and help me do it, and to keep, and she is very persistent, she will not let me off the hook until the desk is clear. So that's somebody else to come alongside me and hold me accountable. I recommend it as a way of doing it. The important thing is keep going until you've cleared it. You then need to keep it that way, and that means every day taking 5 minutes to clear what you've got there so that you know what's there. Put stuff into folders, put stuff into files, whatever, that keep them in front of you or keep things sorted out. You may need an electronic system of keeping things. Sometimes you can scan stuff and put it into storage, keep it on a hard disk. That certainly is a good way of keeping paper or keeping records without keeping the paper. I suggest that where you do have paper, you put it into separate folders that keep them orderly, and don't hoard stuff. Throw it away. Get rid of it unless it's something that is going to be important in the future. Let me go on to lack of self-discipline. Well, somebody has said self-discipline is a habit, but so is a lack of self-discipline. A lack of self-discipline is a habit. How do we deal with it? Well, the psychologist will tell you that sometimes lack of self-discipline comes from a health problem of some kind. So are you tired? Are you excessively tired? Are you getting enough sleep? What's your diet like? Are you getting some exercise? You see, those things all can have a depressive effect on us, which then cause us not to feel willing to discipline ourselves. It takes effort to some extent to discipline yourself. Self-talk, saying, I will not accept this way of behaving. I want to change myself. I want to do something about it. So I'm determined to be orderly and sort things out, to be organized. I'm going to do a daily plan and I'm going to stick to it. Various reinforcements, keeping your goals visible, sticking them on a mirror, keeping your daily plan clearly visible. Don't do the daily plan and then let it disappear under a pile of paper. Keep it visible. Use everything that you can that prompts you to action, prompts you to do it. These are all just hints and abilities. Basically, it's going to come back to you and your sense of purpose or will. And that probably needs the work of the Holy Spirit in your life to bring you to a greater level of self-discipline. It is, after all, a fruit of the Spirit, isn't it? Self-control, self-discipline. So it's a fruit of the Spirit. We should be asking the Spirit to be growing that in us. The inability to say no. Lots of us fall into this. Partly it's kind of an occupational hazard of being a Christian. We want to say yes to people. We want to be of service and to help them. So why do we find it so hard to say no? We want to please people. We like to feel needed. We like to serve because that's what we're taught. And those are all good things to do. The problem is, when we get to the situation that I think you were describing, where you've got multiple different organizations all asking you to do different things, and it's very, very hard to say no, especially if they haven't asked you to do something before and now they're asking, and you feel, well, I really ought to. So it's very difficult to say no when we've already got more than enough on our plates. So we have to learn how to do it. There are four steps that I'm going to suggest. Start out by listening, making sure you understand. Is what they're asking you to do something that you could help do in 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Or is it a major piece of work that's going to be involved? Because if it's basically answering a question or two, making a phone call, then maybe. But there's a limit, obviously, isn't there? If you listen and once you've ensured that you understand what the request is, and it's more than you can actually manage, and you want to say no, then say no. Say no. The way that you say no is important. We do it politely, we do it kindly, we do it lovingly. We say, I'm really sorry, but I cannot do that. I cannot be there. I cannot speak at your conference or whatever it might be. But you do it firmly and clearly. You're not opening up. Well, maybe. Some of us are tempted sometimes to soften the no into a maybe. What we mean is no. But we say, well, maybe. And actually, that's much more frustrating for the person at the other end because they don't know that ultimately you're going to say, no, I can't. But you've only just taken yourself off the hook by saying maybe. Give your reasons. Say why not. I can't do it because I already have three conferences booked. I cannot come to or speak at another one. That's a limit. I can't be away. So no, sorry. Perhaps offer alternatives. I can't do it, but maybe so-and-so can. Or I can't help on this occasion, but if you ask me next year and you do it early, then I'll be happy to think about it again. Saying no is important. Knowing when to. It's harder still to say no to the boss. If the boss is asking you, it's hard to say no. Not everybody here has a boss, but if you do, and they ask you to do something, and then they ask you to do something else, and ask you to do something else, it may be that you should be saying no. I know that in many cultures that's really an unacceptable thing to do. So let me give you some hints. First of all, let that boss know what the conflicts are. That if you're tempted to say no, or if you want to say no because you've already got 15 things that you're doing that he's asked you to do, and you cannot take a 16th one on, then you can say, look, this is what it will do. I can do it, but only if I don't do this, this, and this. You have the choice. You see, you're inviting them to decide what you should decide or drop in order to be able to do it. Because, after all, in the end, they're setting the priorities. If they set the priorities and say, this one is my most important one, then fair enough. But that means these others are going to drop off the list. Saying no to the boss can be done if it's done in the right way and made clear and they're given choice. I suggest it's perfectly possible to do. And it's straight, it's honest. And finally, procrastination, which is linked to self-discipline. Why do we put things off? Why do you and I put off to tomorrow what we know we ought to be doing today? I know that all of these can be present in that. The fear of failing, I don't want to start it because if I start it, I could screw it up. I'm really not interested. It's boring. I don't want to have to do this because it's a bore. I've got so many other things pressing on me. I just can't do this one. That's the conflicting pressures. And then, I'm doing things that I enjoy doing. Why would I stop doing them in order to do something that I know I must do, but which I'd rather do these other things? I don't know about you, I certainly have those. There are things I enjoy doing and things I don't enjoy doing. And I'll always try to choose the ones I enjoy doing more than the ones that I don't. So, the result is obvious, lateness and unpreparedness and so on. How do we do it? What do we tackle? I think, again, I say it's a spiritual issue as much as anything else. We need to be bringing it to God in prayer and getting the Holy Spirit to help us with this challenge. Giving us that fruit of the Spirit, self-control, that enables us to take it on. I like the do-it-now attitude. I found that when I say to myself, do it now, get it done, get it out of the way, do it the best you can, it can be a real lifesaver. And what a great feeling when you have got it done. As I was saying about the plan, set a deadline for starting it, even if you can't set a deadline for finishing it. At least set a deadline to get it started, because that gets it underway. And then you will find it starts to unfold. And think how you feel when it's done. Folks, if you can get on top of time management, if you can plan, and if you can use some of these techniques, I think you'll deserve to celebrate when it's done. My time is up, folks. I think probably I will otherwise get disqualified. Thank you. Good. Thank you.